JB agreed with him. Both men, war captain and weapons master, had made a compact to say nothing to anyone else, least of all to the traitor himself. The traitor was a proud man. He refused to admit to any physical weakness or debility, and death was the ultimate, final debility. Ryan had noted the evidence, the racking, lung-shredding cough in the mornings, the sickness he thought no one knew about, the grayness of face, splashes of blood he'd not noticed. It all added up. The disease was eating the traitor up, and it was getting worse, heading inexorably toward the final dreadful extremity. And although there were medicos back in the apps, the old bastard refused to see them under any circumstances. Didn't trust them. He'd had a kid brother who had been shot up in the legs years back and had been put to the knife. But the doc had bungled. The kid had gotten gangrene, had died in terrible agony, rotting away before the traitor's eyes. Since then, forget it. No quacks. Ryan didn't know what to do. For once in his life, he felt helpless, useless. The traitor had taken him in, had given him back something he thought he'd lost forever. And now, when the traitor needed help desperately, there was no way of giving it to him. Ryan went down the steps, clinging to the rail as the big war wag lurched. Crouching in his gun port, the dark-faced kid called L glanced around at him as he approached and shook his head.
Nothing. This is an easy one, Ryan. No problems.
Don't put the hoodoo on us, kid. We're not there yet. These hills we're entering. Bad muties. Full of them.
They won't bother us. Ain't no marauders got half what we got. We could cream them up.
Hasn't stopped plenty of others from trying.
Ryan stared bleakly out of the gun port. It was still dark, but dawn raced up behind them, and Moxon was getting closer by the minute. His mouth twisted up as he thought of the gross figure of Jordan Teague, self-proclaimed baron of these territories. Ryan hated the thought that they were carrying arms to him, but he acknowledged that the traitor was right. You kept your word even to scum, unless they really crossed you. If you began breaking your word, folks would start getting edgy with you, even if they knew all the circumstances. If you broke your word once, you could do it twice. Trouble was that fat bastard Teague was probably buying guns from other traders too, building up an awesome armory. Rumor was strong too that in the past couple of years Moxon had become a hellhole, a dirty beacon that beckoned only the most viciously depraved of men, rad rats, cannibals, barely human creatures who, because of their terrible mutations and deformities, have been squeezed dry of any kind of humanity whatsoever. It sounded to Ryan as if Jordan Teague was gathering muscle for some grim purpose. And the more you traded stuff to the guy, the more quickly that purpose would be achieved.
You keep your eyes wide open, kid. First moving shadow you see, hit it. Hit it hard. Take no chances.
He turned abruptly. He moved back toward the steps and began mounting them, then froze.
Shit! We got trouble!
Ryan vaulted up the last remaining steps and slammed across the cabin, reaching up for and grabbing his automatic rifle as he did so. He flicked the selector to 3-shot and slung it as he reached the driver's area, clutching the back of Dix's chair as the huge vehicle lost its forward motion. Men tumbled down from the upper chambers, and Ryan could hear the thud of boots behind him as more men disgorged from the bunk rooms, the jittery MG-like rattle of rifle checks and mag slams.
Teague? Who knows? Doubtful. Muties more like.
The traitor rammed a mag up into a battered-looking Armalite rifle, his face drawn, his eyes flickering around the cabin. Ryan stared forward. The road ahead, seen through the narrow windshield, was empty of human movement. But it was alive with tracer streams from the cabin roof machine gun as the gunner sent fire lines exploding up and down the potholed surface, hammering into the rocks that loomed all about. They were still moving slowly forward. Cone glanced around from the radio.
She's out of it, maybe immobilized. It's number 4 truck, blown rear end. They think a landmine, maybe. Now they can't move, and neither can the rest of the train.
Can't pass them either, too damn narrow. Cone, tell them to hold on. Jess, close down.
Ryan sprang up the steel ladder into the MG blister, squeezed himself up behind the gunner's chair. O'Mara, the gunner, was training around, weaving short-burst tracer patterns up and down the road and across, kicking up dust and blacktop chunks, then easing himself back to angle high into the rocks on each side. Ryan stared back along the Warwag's roof, saw the convoy as a drunken line of light stretching away and down, those vehicles at the rear still moving slowly, closing up. 3 vehicles back from the Warwag, fire could be seen, not strong, but a dull red glow that flickered feebly against the bright spot shafts from the cab-mounted searchlights, on each land wagon truck. But Ryan could see nothing else. No movement, no human presence. No sudden and erratic stabs of red muzzle flash. He turned to stare frontward again. The road was picked clean for yards ahead, empty of anything.
Cool it, O'Mara. Don't waste ammo.
He scrambled down the ladder and strode to the radio op.
What gives?
No alarms. Just number four's blown. Lost all traction. Everyone else is saying no problems. Four's starting to burn, but they reckon they can contain it. They'll have to step outside. I'll tell...
No, wait.
Hell, Ryan, it's just an old landmine is all. Could have been there since the nuke.
I said wait!
Cone shrugged and went back to his mic as the tall man swung away. Ryan didn't like the explanation about a landmine waiting all that long a time before deciding to blow. This pass was too damned narrow. It should have blown years ago.
Reports are still tight everywhere, except for number four. They're getting a mite twitchy, Ryan.
Tell him to hold on.
There were six exit points on the war wag. One, a hatch to the roof. One at the rear, presided over by two MGs. Two toward the rear, one each side, above the back portions of the port and starboard rocket tubes. An escape hatch below the driver's chair, very tight, very secure, and one that opened out, portside, opposite, though back from the radio table. Ryan knew without needing to check that now all four main doors were surrounded on the inside by weaponed-up men, ready to sell their lives dearly, five-man squads for each. Nor did he need to check whether all of these doors were primed, for he knew the chest would automatically have triggered the internal locks electrically. That killed the carefully engineered boobies set into the locks themselves. But still no one could simply open up from outside and walk in. Door control was on the inside. The trader was seated in Dix's chair, ready to take over if Chess caught it somehow. Dix was at the rear, in command there. Two runners were ready, two kids in their late teens, positioned one at each end of the long vehicle in case radio contact died on them or was knocked out. And above, another man had gone to join O'Mara with a signal lamp. In each of the massive war wags, it would be the same. Men jumping to their places smoothly, fluidly, without thinking about it for a second. Cone crouched over his wall transceiver, uncomfortably aware, as always, that he would be literally a sitting target once the door was open. Ryan killed the lights, turning the large cabin into a place of shadows, weirdly lit by the driver control lights and lamps in the bunkroom corridor. He pressed two buttons on a small console beside the door, flicked two long bolts, twisted at the handle with his left hand while stabbing a finger at another button on the panel. A small bulb in the panel remained dark.
External lights have gone or been blown. This could be it.
He shoved the door open with his boot and sprang back, to be greeted by darkness outside. Darkness that was not night darkness, but deep dawn gray. As his eyes became accustomed to the near absence of light, he could just make out a jumble of rocks near the edge of the road where nothing moved. His auto rifle was held two-handed, trigger ready. Adrenaline was boosting into his bloodstream. He could hear nothing. Every vehicle in his wag train had rolled to a halt. Then he glanced down. He saw the hand, long, fingered, and bony, appear as though by magic at the bottom of the doorway. Something clutched in it. The hand jerked, unclenched, disappeared. A steel ball clattered fast across the floor toward him. Without conscious thought, he reacted so his right boot hit the object on the bounce, sent it sailing back out into the night again, his right finger squeezing off two three-round bursts of automatic fire that angrily highlighted the face of the man flattened against the wall beside the door. Ryan dove to his right.
They're under us!
The grenade ripped itself apart among the boulders, sending steel shards and bits of rock whistling in through the door. Ryan rolled, shot to his feet almost in one fluid movement, and lunged at the doorway. His rifle flicked a full automatic and spewing rounds, hot brass clattering against the steel wall nearest him. As he reached the doorway, two shadowy figures vaulted up into the space, only to be punched back, their chests slug-stitched, their backs spraying blood and bone. Ryan grabbed the handle, pouring more lead down into the road, and yanked on it, slamming the door tight. He shot the bolts, breathing hard, then swung around on Cone, his brain already working out survival details.
Get hold of four! Tell him to abandon ship! Up through the roof and jump for three! There's probably guys crawling all over the place, so watch the hell out. Tell them the last man out must leave a four-minute booby as near as possible to their cargo. Tell two and three we're shifting butt right now. Tell the rear trucks to backpedal fast.
You got it. Unit 4, abandon ship.
Move it, Chess!
Hang on!
Ryan grabbed for a handhold as the huge war wag lurched forward with a mighty howl, gathering speed and lumbering onward.
Must have been well hidden in those rocks. Didn't see a new blasted thing. They were on the road. Crazies.
We probably flattened the score before the guy who mattered managed to grab hold of four. Suicidal fuckers.
Nice place to die. Ah, shit! I don't believe it! Tunnels! Tunnels under the road! When we slowed to the slope, that's when they jumped us, grabbed our underside!
Ahead, far ahead, the road had opened up, a part of it revealing red flashes, tracer lines soaring toward them. O'Mara poured fire straight into the hole, the angle of fire steepening as they roared nearer and nearer.
Four's out, but it seems like there's a hand-to-hand atop three. It's getting rough out there.
Hellfire, they got stickies!
Ryan swung around, saw with a chill of horror, four finger-like appendages appear from out of sight below the windshield, slap hard under the glass, and flatten out slimily, suctioning to the smooth surface. Another four-finger hand whipped up into view, this one clutching a flat, black object, which was slammed against the glass. The two hands vanished from sight.
Let be mine!
Ryan stood looking at the object clinging to the outside of the windshield for only as long as it took to blink an eye, but thought and images torrented through his mind. The window was a goner. Nothing could be done about it. If he had armor-piercing rounds in his mag, he could blast the window, punch the bomb away. But that would still open them up to the outside. And in any case, he didn't have APs up the spout, and by the time he banged a fresh mag in, that limpet would have blown, and they'd be holed anyhow. He wondered for an instant whether Chess, one of the newer drivers, only recruited in the past 12 months and lacking the experience of some of the older guys, had, as soon as the alarm had erupted, stabbed a forefinger at one very special button on his console beneath the Warwag's massive wheel.
Get back!
The traitor plunged past him, Chess and Cone tumbling after. Ryan's men were already diving for cover. Ryan jumped for the bunk room passage, hit the deck, and found himself lying beside Chess.
The E button! Did you...
Ryan brushed glass shards off himself as he scrambled to his feet and ran for the front of the cabin. The screen was out except for thick, jagged ridges of glass poking up through swirling black smoke. The metal surround, near where the limpet had been placed, was sagging up top, buckled below. Two of the team began spraying foam at the flames, killing them, and Cone was already at his radio again, throat mic in place, his fingers working switches.
She's okay. We're still online, still connected.
Get the gas masks ready, but don't put them on!
Ryan crouched in the dying smoke, squeezing short lead bursts out into the night and downward at a high angle, trying to clean off any stickies that might still be hanging to the Warwag snout, although he guessed that whoever was hitting them would almost certainly be back underneath, clinging on, waiting to make the next move. The smoke was clearing fast, the flames dead. Chess was back at the wheel again, body armor now buckled over his chest. The spotlight still lit up the road ahead, and now Ryan could see what looked like fireflies dancing up in the rocks to each side, snipers homing in on them. Above, O'Mara's MG began stuttering, trying to keep the bastards' heads down.
You know, I've been meaning to tidy up that shelf below the window. It was getting clogged up with all kinds of crap. Those guys did a sweet job.
Did you hit the E button?
Sure I hit the E button. And we're still in business. As far as I can tell, the worst damage is to the glass and frame.
That figures.
Yeah, well, you better pray it ain't gonna snow, Ryan. Because I don't like driving in a blizzard. Especially if that blizzard's coming in it. Hey, do I clean them off now? Fry them out?
No, not yet. Wait.
The E button. A nifty device dreamed up by J.B. Dix for just such an emergency as this. Plate metal strips around each Warwag, topside and underside, were connected to the powerful generators at the rear, but insulated from the rest of the chassis and frame. The E button was a failsafe. Now all it needed was the tug of a lever, and anyone or anything touching those innocent-looking rods got instant heartburn. Not to mention everything else burn. But Ryan did not want to blow that one until they had reached a last-ditch situation. It used up far too much power. Ryan could hear bangs and cracks outside, short, rattling bursts of autofire, the hammer effect of rounds pounding the exterior. It wasn't exactly a standoff, but he figured their attackers were conferring somewhere, probably in the tunnels below the road. He idly wondered if they were new tunnels or old tunnels, tunnels maybe dug out by the guys who built the stockpiles. They were more likely new ones, excavated for just such ambushes as this. Ryan half-turned, snapping his black-gloved fingers.
Come on, come on.
Two men shoved past him, holding a wood frame that enclosed a crisscross of fine steel mesh. They leaned over Chess, ramming it into place over the buckled screen frame, and clipped it.
Now let him try lobbing a gas can in. And according to my cron, we've got about 2.5 minutes before the booby and four blows. Lint, Hooley, up top.
The two men who had carried the wire barrier followed him at the run down the cabin. They threaded into the bunkroom passage, waited while Ryan slid open a side door into a ladder well. Ryan mounted the ladder fast but silently, checked out the viewports at the top. Nothing. He began flicking at well-oiled bolt levers in the darkness, slicking them back. Then he slid the hatch sideways softly on its specially fixed runners until it would go no farther and stuck his head out into the cool air. Far to the east, the gray twilight was gradually easing into milky dawn, but here, a wash of flame from the now fiercely burning truck was the only light that mattered, casting a lurid glare over the scene, causing shadow dances on the blacktop, highlighting lurking figures among the roadside rocks and boulders. There was a gap in the convoy. It was now split into two distinct sections fore and aft of the blazing truck. Ryan's war wag had pulled well forward, and trucks 1, 2, and 3 had followed. Far down the road, Ryan could see the snub-nosed bulk of the second war wag, with the rest of the convoy trailing behind it. Ryan focused his one eye on the roof of 3 and saw that it was clear. Either the guys from 4 had managed to tumble down through the truck's roof hatch into comparative safety, or they were dead meat on the road. He could see no one in the other trucks, but that didn't mean there weren't stickies clinging to the sides. He crawled out into the roof gully, which ran the length of the vehicle, front to rear, wide enough for two men to lie side by side and be hidden from view except from above. Another idea of Dix's. It enabled a war wag commander under ground attack to slide men up unseen into sniping positions. On each side of the roof, maybe less than a meter in from the edge, were clamped two long metal rods running the length of the vehicle. On the face of it, a stupid piece of construction, since it allowed attackers climbing up the sides an easy handhold to enable them to pull themselves onto the roof, where a surprise awaited them. Ryan crawled to the rear, hearing Hooley follow him. Lint would stay in the ladder well, rifle ready. He reached the end of the roof and stared down at Truck 1 below him. Truck 1 was a big trailer rig, its rear end converted in a very special but unobtrusive way. Truck 1 always followed the trader's war wagon convoy. Strict rule A. Strict rule B was that it closed up tight to the war wag whenever the convoy stopped anywhere. Real tight. Strict rule C was the truck 2 always pulled well back from 1, giving it plenty of space at the rear. Just in case. Ryan grinned a feral grin. The jump from here was an easy one, no more than a couple of steps. And once he'd landed, it would not take 2 seconds before he'd be sliding through the instantly opened hatch above the rig's cab to drop into the interior. Still smiling, Ryan edged himself over the lip of the gully and began to crawl across the flat roof toward the port side of the vehicle. He wanted to get a better look at the roadside, see if there was much congregating going on below. He had an idea there probably was. He half-turned his head to check back on Hooley, but the guy was still in the gully. He looked back front again, and the smile froze on his face as a head popped into view only meters away. A head out of a nightmare. Huge eyes, 2 tiny nostrils and a moist, flabby flesh. No mouth, no ears. Hairless. 4 fleshy suckers slapped suddenly onto the roof edge, squishing tight. Another suckered hand whipped up and around, shot toward Ryan's face with the velocity of a striking snake. A sticky. A severely mutated being with sucker pads for fingers and toes, with which it could cling to any surface like a leech, so tenaciously that it required main force to pull them off. Even in death, there was little relaxation. Once those fingers smacked onto flesh and exuded their glutinous ooze, there was little chance of being able to tear them off. Ryan had once seen a man attacked by a sticky. The guy hadn't known what hit him. The creature had kneed him, clutched him around the throat left-handed, grabbed his face with the right. The finger pads had slapped home, then retracted, taking the man's face with them, the flesh literally suctioned off the bone in bloody, doughy strips, as though the sticky was tugging his hand out of red molasses. Eyeballs had popped. Faceless, the man had collapsed, shrieking to the ground. Bullets hurt them. A heart or headshot could finish them. But otherwise, their wet, rubbery flesh seemed able to absorb the heaviest punishment. And in a battle situation, they were like beings possessed. No one seemed to know where the hell they came from, how they'd mutated. No one could even figure out quite what bizarre combination of genetic malfunctions had created them in the first place. The first sticky that Ryan had seen a couple of years back had been in a traveling carny, a weird and horrifying collection of freaks and savagely mutated beings that rode around the Deathlands, ramrodded by a fat ringmaster called Gert Wolfram, something of a freak himself as he weighed well over 150 kilos and had to be carried everywhere in a special construction chair borne by 6 giants. The sticky's act had consisted of walking up and down high walls, no hands, and pulling the heads off dogs and wolves. Literally, pulling them off. When asked where he'd found the creature, Wolfram had zipped his lip, become extremely edgy. Not long after, sticky sightings came in from all over. Soon they became accepted. Hell, a mutie was a mutie. Still, how they ate, for instance, was just one of the many mysteries about them discussed by Deathlanders, with nothing else of importance to chew the fat over. Right now, however, the manner in which Stickies ate held no interest for Ryan at all. All he could think of as he rolled desperately to one side was the incredible sucking power of those oozing pads lunging for his face. He rolled so fast, so unthinkingly, that before he knew it, he was on his back and lying atop his rifle as the hand squelched down on the roof surface inches from him. That didn't panic him. Already his right hand was at his belt, grabbing for the hilt of the deadly panga sheathed there at his waist. Smoothly the blade came out, and just as smoothly, just as fast, he was rolling back to his original position, the panga gripped tight, then stabbing outward in a savage, power-packed lunge. The blade thudded into the creature's throat, just above the clavicle, or what passed for a collarbone in his rubbery body. It jammed, which was exactly what Ryan wanted. Still holding the hilt of the wickedly sharp half-sword, he jerked himself to his knees. Two-handed, his muscles cording into cables along his arms, he tugged at the wriggling creature. Brute force, it was the only answer. With a sloppy, plopping sound, one hand came loose from the Warwag's roof, then the other. Ryan scrambled to his feet, heaved at the Sticky, pulled him over the metal rod, booted the creature in the side of the head. The Sticky was trying to grab for him. Ryan used all his strength to slam the creature down on the roof. He smashed his boot onto its chest and tugged at the blade. Dark red ichor was squeezing out of the rubbery folds of its flesh, and the panga came out soggily. Ryan danced backward as the beast fluted its fury, its wide blank eyes red-rimmed. It sprang at him. Ryan swung the panga two-fisted, felt it bite satisfyingly into oleaginous flesh, watched grimly as the head flew off like a kicked ball, sailing away into the surrounding gloom. The torso sagged on suddenly limp legs. It collapsed sideways and rolled across the roof before finally slumping against the rail. Ryan turned to jump back from the roof gully.
Fire blast!
More stickies were hauling themselves up and over the other side of the Warwag's roof. A brief glance at his right showed shadowy forms crowding onto the nearest trucks in fluid, rippling waves, arm over arm, seemingly inexorably. Cooley in the gully was already throwing up his rifle, and flame was stabbing from it in short bursts. A stammer of fire from the ladder well told him that Lint, too, had opened up. Ryan scabbarded the panga, then unslung his own piece. No point in silent killing now.
Come on, you fire-blasted bastard!
Then he leapt for the gully as more squealing figures came over the side behind him like an ugly tide. This was going to be close, he thought. It flickered through his brain that no way was he going to be able to make it to the hatch before he was overwhelmed by the monsters. He opened his mouth to scream at Lint, and then a vast, soaring gout of flame fireballed high into the sky to his right with a tremendous cracking roar, half-deafening him. The shockwave of the explosion blew him over, sent him tumbling into the gully where he slammed into Hooli, already a sprawled and dazed figure.
Shit! Number four! Hellspy, I forgot how much bang-bang we piled into that one. Must have been most of that dynamite for the trip.
Groggily, his ears ringing, he got to his knees and bawled at Lint, half-seen in the hatchway.
Tell him now! Now!
Lint's head disappeared. Ryan clambered to his feet. The stickies had come to a halt, were gawping back down along the convoy at what was left of the once blazing truck, now only bits of burning debris scattered about among the rocks and boulders. There was a crater where the vehicle had once stood. The stickies had come out of their daze. They were advancing over the edge of the roof again, squealing in rage and triumphant anticipation. Ryan counted at least 20 of the brutes, with almost certainly more on the way. And that was just on his Warwag. But it didn't matter now. The beasts were all so much dead meat. Calmly he watched as the roof-long rod suddenly glowed into life, triggered by Chess in the Warwag's cabin below. In a second, the entire picture was transformed into one of utter carnage as several thousand volts flowed into the roof rails, along the metal strips that lined the vehicle's side panels, and hung along the length of the Warwag's underside. Ryan turned his eye to look along the length of the convoy, seeing the side panels of each Warwag, land wag, and truck glow eerily white, almost in sequence, as in each cab a lever was thrown, power was generated and death created. The air held a solid reek of cordite, smoke, and something akin to roast pork, stomach-churningly strong. All along the convoy, the panel glow faded, to die as abruptly as it had come to life. Blackened bodies, glued to panels, now fell to the ground like overripe fruit from a tree, littering the roadside in jumbled heaps of starkly stiffened limbs. There were survivors, those who had not been swarming over the vehicle, those who had not been in contact with plates or rods. But they could be mopped up easily enough, and quickly enough. Right now, in fact. Ryan gestured to Hooley, then ran to the rear of the roof and jumped for the cab of the closely parked truck behind.
Tell him I'm off on a buggy ride!
Scale!
The man called Scale watched the carnage from the shelter of a small cave overlooking the road. His face registered no emotion. It rarely did, but his mouth was dry.
I can't believe it. The Stickies blew it. No one's ever said the traitor had electrified his war wags and rigs. And the power they must have used up in maybe 15, 20 secs. How can they afford to piss it away like that? Oh, that weirdo prick, the warlock, is not gonna be happy when he finds out all his Stickies have been fried like bacon. Not happy at all. In fact, it might be wiser not to tell him. All things considered, it might be a hell of a lot wiser not to go within 1,000 miles of him again. Just avoid the fucker like the plague.
Hey, Scale!
So much for Fat Harry and all his shit about the traitor winding down his operation. I got a good mind to drive to that tubby bastard's trading post and give him a token of my thanks. Like maybe flay the skin off him a layer at a time, then salt the nuke-shitting piece of human-shaped garbage down. There's so much flesh on the bastard that it might take some sweet time. And maybe I'll salt him after every crapping layer.
Scale, listen.
But we don't have enough gas to make such a visit possible right now. And that sneaky fat bastard's built his trading post like a fortress anyway. He clears all the scrub, shrub, and brush away so he can always see who's coming. And he's ass-licked every mutie in the region so they all help him. But if it weren't for that, we'd take a little trip out and sort the fat lion sweaty hog out. As it is...
God damn it, Scale! No need for that, Scale.
Every need.
Scale, we gotta get out of here damn fast.
Yeah.
Maybe we could regroup, huh, Scale? Hit these bastards when they least expect us.
I ought to kill you. I ought to kill you right now.
Scale would do no such thing for the simple reason that big as he was, powerful as he was, kingpin of his own group of mutants as he certainly was, by force of personality and force of arms, he could not drive a powered vehicle. And the long-armed man was his personal wheelman. Scale had simply never bothered to learn the mechanics of driving. From the time he was a child, Scale had always been able to make others do his chores for him, and driving was something he left to the long-armed man. Scale stared down at the scene below. Mouth gaping, Reed watched too. Watched as the high back of the big trailer rig behind the leading war wag suddenly swung away and down, crashing to the road and forming a long ramp down which surged a small armed personnel buggy. A second buggy roared down the ramp after the first, then a third. The rig was a massive buggy pen.
Holy shit, Scale. Why'd we have to take on the traitor? We were out of our minds to do that.
But Reed knew what was at the heart of it, and who was at the heart of it. The strange and sinister being who sometimes called himself the Warlock, sometimes the Sorcerer, sometimes the Magus. The one who made fleeting visits to the Deathlands bearing weird old-world artifacts. Sometimes weapons, sometimes gadgets, whose exact purpose often took a long time to explain. Reed was afraid of the Warlock, with his terrifying half-face and his steel eye, and his two tightly leashed companions. It was the Warlock who had let loose the Stickies, maybe 3-4 winters back. He had brought a couple to a small township to the west, suddenly appearing one day in his armored truck with them in tow. One had died, had suddenly sickened, just wasted away, much to the Warlock's displeasure. But Wolfram the Carney Man had taken the other, taught it tricks, carried it off.